Hey, y'all. My name is Ann Wyatt. I started my career in workforce development with the state of Kentucky in 2010. That experience ignited a deep passion for manufacturing within me. I started this show hoping to raise more awareness around the bright outlook manufacturing careers have. Join me as I sit down with some of the manufacturing industry's most successful change makers and learn how they're partnering people with technology. It's time to give people more meaningful work. This is Workforce 4.0. Hey, y'all. Welcome back to another episode of Workforce 4.0. This is your host, Ann Wyatt, and we are speaking today with Craig Coyle, the founder of Operation Lead, a very unique and cool workforce tool, if I say so myself. But I'm really excited to delve into that more with you, Craig. In the meantime, could you just give us a brief introduction of who you are and what brought you to the show and a little bit more about Operation Lead?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me, Anne. It's a pleasure to be here. So a little bit about me. I graduated from United States Military Academy back in 2015, and my whole goal in life was to become a pilot. I wanted to do that in the military, and fortunately, I was able to achieve that dream at a pretty young age. I ended up flying Apaches for the United States Army for a little over 8 years, culminating in some pretty significant leadership positions, and I learned a lot about leadership at a pretty young age and decided to transition to the corporate world. Ended up in aerospace and defense and manufacturing, and really just saw a lot of the same or very similar challenges that we experienced in the military with leadership and engaging employees at the front lines and some of the challenges that presents at an organizational level. So decided, you know what, I'm passionate about this. It's time to help a lot of people solve this issue. So I decided to leave my job and we started Operation Lead. Now we're working across the country, helping primarily manufacturing organizations really navigate the complexities of engaging their workforce in 2025. Because as you talk about all the time, the labor market and the workforce has evolved and it's changed, and our processes and the way that we run our businesses have to evolve and change as well.
Very cool. That's amazing. I love that you are a pilot. Can I tell you something?
Yeah.
Are you going to judge me?
No.
Okay. I am terrified of flying and I fly all the time, but I am like, I'm terrified.
Can I tell you something and can you not judge me?
Okay.
I'm terrified of heights.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's weird. I grew up and there was a pretty big mall where I grew up, and it was four stories, like super really big mall. In the center of the mall, you could see all the way down into like the basement, and I could never walk near the ground. And then I become a pilot. So make it make sense.
I want you to make it make sense because I think that is such a cool job. I think it's really cool that flying aircraft in general is just really cool. I would absolutely have a panic attack. I would pass out in the cockpit if I had to fly a plane or a helicopter or anything. Was that scary when you first started flying?
It's different. Like I always, leading up to it, expected my fear height to maybe kick in a little bit. But when you're able to control what's going on in a way, I don't know, it was different. I never really felt that. Now there are other things that you worry about as a pilot, because once you open the book of how all those things work and what's going on, flight and flying and being in the air just never look the same or feel the same again. But yeah, it was a really fun way to spend my 20s for sure.
That's awesome. What was the coolest thing you ever saw while you were flying?
Oh, man. There's probably a lot of things I can't share. Being an Apache pilot.
True.
I will say one of the coolest things I ever did was I got to work with and be the lead planner for the Army-Navy flyover about 4 or 5 years ago. So I got to be on the set of College Game Day. I met all the ESPN personalities. On the field, all this kind of stuff. It was really cool.
That is really cool. I cannot imagine the type of planning and organization to execute a flyover at one of those games. And I've been to so many NFL games where they've done that. every time. The Tennessee Titans up in Nashville, actually.
Yep.
Been to a lot of Titans games, and they do a flyover like every game, and just the precision that would have to take place to do that is mind-blowing to me.
Yeah, it's especially when you're in the aircraft and you're only X amount of feet away from another aircraft. A lot can go wrong, but there's a lot of communication and, quite honestly, leadership principles that's applied. And, you know, you execute it and choreograph it just like professional dancers would at the end of the day. So
that's awesome. And I definitely want to get more into that leadership aspect here, but in Workforce 4.0 tradition, I've got to know, Craig, if we were out in Nashville and we were hanging out on Broadway or on Second Avenue, maybe there's a spot for this, but if we were there and we were doing karaoke, what would be your go-to karaoke song?
Oh, I love this question. I love that you ask it too. It's so interesting to hear people's responses. So Nashville is a party town, so you have to have a party song. And mine's a little controversial because it's about 8.5 minutes long. So sometimes you got to try to sneak fast forwarding it to get to the good part. But mine is Paradise by the Dashboard Light by Meatloaf. That song starts a party when you get into the groovy part. And the cool thing too is if you're with a group of people, I can pull my wife up on stage and get her to do the duet with me or something. So you get a little bit of involvement going on with it as well.
That's awesome. I love that. I think you definitely have to get into it, but once it gets going, it's a banger.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, sometimes you got to judge the environment, see if you can get away with it. Because you don't ever want to be the guy that's hogging the stage on karaoke night. You know what I mean? But if you can work with the DJ and get him to slow roll into minute number 6 of the song, you're in a good spot.
That's awesome. That's amazing. So when I go to promote your episode on my Instagram stories, I'll make sure to scroll through around the minute 6 marker and use that excerpt.
Exactly. There you go.
Awesome. Very cool. I know that a big part of your life was serving in the military. I do want to formally thank you for that. Anytime I have a veteran on the show, I commend you. Thank you.
Thanks
for,
so much
for that.
The support means a lot for everybody and for the people still serving. So that's awesome.
Yeah. I'm thankful for you because I don't know that I would, again, it's like me flying. I don't know that I would pass out. or I would cry, or maybe both. I'm not sure.
You'd do great. Give yourself some credit. You'd do great.
I appreciate that. But it's got to always be interesting when you're coming from the military sector into the private sector of business, because I feel like there's a lot of differences between those two systems. And from your perspective, I think that it's interesting for us in the audience to know what are some of those biggest differences that you have made note of over the years.
Yeah, I think there's two things that really come to mind for me, two major differences, but I think in a way they might offset each other a little bit because a lot of the challenges still remain the same. You know, number one thing is in the military has to promote from within. They can't say, oh, we need a team leader.
That's right.
Let's go find a team leader. No, it's you start from rank private and you work your way up. And so it is truly, it's an up and out system. So if you don't keep going up, you go out. And the only way to get a leadership position is to promote up, right? Now, the other thing I would say that the military doesn't have driving it that the private sector does is obviously profit, right? In business, everything matters and is tied to the bottom line in some way, shape, or form. In the military, it's the opposite. It's mission. That is the most important thing. Now, we do have budgetary constraints, but mission is the most important thing, and you are allocated certain resources, and your job is to leverage those resources and accomplish the mission. And in a way, those look like glaring differences, but when you peel back the onion a little bit, in the private sector, you ultimately have a mission as well, right? And it's to hit your numbers because you have to have a growing, profitable business in order to pay everybody, right? At the end of the day, keep the doors open. So in a way, you have a mission and you have allocated resources and you have to go accomplish that as well. And then the other piece too is you may be able to pick and pull and find talent from outside your organization. But at the end of the day, you have to own the culture and the environment and how people lead and manage inside your four walls. And so even though you may be able to get someone who's experienced leadership in another industry, at another organization, that doesn't relinquish your authority and, quite honestly, your responsibility to make sure that you prepare them and you give them the tools to be successful inside your organization.
That's amazing. Yeah, that you bring up a very good point of the military and also government. So those two things are very similar, where there are policies where you have to promote it from within first, especially government, any type of federal, state governments, things like that. And then that you look within your organization, find those key leaders and promote them, move them up. But I love what you're saying about the mission statement. And I love that you're saying that there's a choice when you're a private company to follow the mission statement. And in the military, there's really not a choice, is there? There's not a choice in government either, for what it's worth.
Very true.
How important do you think it is to our manufacturing executives and other leadership to lead by example?
I think it's critical. I think that's the most important thing you can do as a senior leader. If you're not leading by example, then I would argue you're not leading. And the challenge is, especially when you talk about mission, like, I think a lot of people get leading by example confused as to be like meaning that it's got to be a certain personality or you're engaging a certain way. But in reality, I think leading by example, like you said, and like this question branched out of, is it's actually leading with purpose, it's leading with clarity, and it's leading with vision.
It's the clarity piece that is so big.
Exactly. And I think when you talk specifically about mission, obviously that's a principle that so many organizations in the corporate world have kind of pulled from military and government in a way. But I think a lot's gotten lost in translation there. Because if you think about most corporate mission statements, it's like this fun, cultural, fuzzy thing that gets painted on the wall. But if you ask anybody about it, they can't tell you what it is. They can't remember it. It's certainly not motivating anybody. And a lot of times it's just corporate legal jargon. So what purpose is it actually doing? No, a mission statement in the military, by regulation, is a clear definition of what success looks like, when success has to happen, and why success has to happen. And it's not just one mission statement for the Army. No, every organization at every level has a mission statement down to the very front lines that's nested within the greater headquarters mission statement. And I think that's the biggest thing that's gotten lost in translation in industry, is usually it's just big company or one big plant has one big mission. How is that mission flowing down to the technician on the front lines? How are you giving them clear purpose and motivation so that they're engaged and they're activated and they love showing up to work every day? That's how you lead by example, and that's how you lead with a mission.
I agree with that. In a lot of retention studies that I've done as well, when you look at those kinds of interviews and feedback from former employers, clear that there could have maybe been a lot of confusion. So leading with that mission statement and making it simple for your team to follow, I feel like is going to better enable them and set them up for success down the road. So I love that. Thank you, Craig.
Yeah.
I've got to know, with Operation Lead, which is your product for workforce development, frontline workforce, it's in line with leading folks and enabling your frontline, as well as leadership development. And maybe this falls more into the controversial Industry 5.0, where it's more about human and connectivity and everything. But how do you think that the frontline workforce will evolve as technology evolves moving forward?
Yeah, that's a question that everybody should be asking right now. And a lot of the surface level conversation around artificial intelligence and automation is it's going to take all of our jobs. if you actually look at a lot of what the job report and research out to 2030 is saying specific to industrial manufacturing, actually saying it's going to create more jobs. There's going to be different jobs, but there's going to be more jobs. And I think the critical thing that I really want senior leaders in the industry to see is that things aren't going to change if we don't change the way we look at the industry. Right? We already have a labor shortage, and it's only going to grow. The labor market's effectively flipped. And whereas we used to be in a power position in the market and we could play the number games, and as long as we could continue to fill, we could keep our costs low and we would be fine. It's totally different now, because once the snowball or domino starts to go downhill, you're in survival mode and it's really hard to get out. Mm-hmm. And so what I really want to encourage people to think about, especially in manufacturing, because most of us, most manufacturing organizations, it's not like a product market fit challenge. It's a, how are we going to successfully bring all of our operations to meet our customer demands? And that's a workforce challenge.
That's a workforce challenge.
And the way that you successfully do that is you create an engaged workforce. If you think about it, employee engagement is ultimately the lead measure towards the lag measures of productivity and efficiency, quality, retention. And if retention is good, then you don't have to worry about acquisition as much. But if retention is good, it's also your best marketing for acquisition, right? And so if we could hone our focus in on this employee engagement metric, then we're onto something. How do you affect employee engagement? I would argue employee engagement is a direct result of the interaction between the frontline worker and the frontline leader. So it's less about the frontline worker and it's more about the frontline leader. How do we create good frontline leaders? We have to empower them and give them the tools, not just to show up every day and check the box and do whatever their manager is leaning over their back to do. No, we have to help them lead, like truly lead, grow, and develop. And that's really what we focus on at Operation Lead, helping senior leaders take a strategic, business-oriented look at frontline leadership and create a system and a framework in their organization to empower those leaders for long time and long-term growth.
Interesting. Can you walk us through that process of what that looks like?
Yeah, absolutely. It really, what I saw in, when I was reflecting on my career in the military, was I had two careers in a way. I was a leader on one hand, mm-hmm. and I was a pilot on the other. And as I was reflecting on kind of some of the challenges that I saw when I was in the aerospace industry, I realized that I was really set up to succeed as a pilot. Like, the stakes were really high, right? If you screw up as a pilot, people die, right?
Yeah, like, yeah.
Unfortunately, that's the case. You screw up as a leader, it's a little bit more fuzzy and gray. As a pilot, I existed in this ecosystem that told me exactly what I had to learn in becoming an expert. I had people that taught me how to learn that stuff and get better at it. And I had people all around me that were all on this journey alongside me. But then as a leader, it was just, hey, figure it out. Do your thing. Yep. Like, the Army taught me how to be a great manager in the Army. Like, I knew exactly what I had to do in terms of Army responsibilities. But to actually lead, like empower and communicate and create clarity and purpose and motivation and direction for my organization, I had to learn all that through business books. And so the three things I really saw that exist in the aviation profession, which, by the way, these three things exist in every other profession, if you look at them, legal profession, medical profession, you name it. These are the things that we want to build into our organizations, because ultimately what they're doing is they're helping you provide a framework that inspires a journey of change for new leaders. It helps people navigate the change model, the change theory, the change cycle. And what it is, number one, you have to have structure. Now, structure isn't just these are the skills you need to develop. It's the structure of a program. There has to be some consistency, some right. expectation management, these kinds of things. So there has to be a formal structure in place. Number two, there has to be guidance. This is like the instructor pilot, right? And for me, it doesn't really matter what that looks like, whether it's informal coaching, whether it's a formal mentorship program. What I really love to see in organizations is like this cohort model, where the advanced cohort is mentoring the junior cohort.
I like that too.
Because that kind of feeds into the last piece, which I think is the most important, which is this concept of community. And when community is tied to structure and guidance, and those three elements are woven together, you get this unique situation where people to your left and your right are also on this, let's call it an emotional journey with you. And when things get hard and you doubt yourself or you face a really difficult situation, you're not relying on your previous relationships that aren't facing these challenges or haven't been through this journey. No, you're leaning on the people that can normalize this journey and help you continue to make the choices that are going to grow you and develop you as a leader. And so structure, guidance, and community, if we can put these things together within our organizations, what I think people are going to see, and I think they're going to see it relatively quickly, is they're not just going to see one leader stand out. They're going to start to see the tide start to rise for all of their leaders. And what's going to happen is engagement is going to flow from that.
Absolutely. And I think we talked a little bit more about this on our pre-recording call.
Yeah.
And we talked about the concept of community and the concept of everyone talks about community on social media and all that. And we both agreed at that point that community, that kind of community was different. The kind of the more I'm thinking about it, the more I am thinking about Reddit. And I'll tell you why, because Reddit is a really great tool. I do not have a Reddit account, but engineers love Reddit.
Mm-hmm.
Because they can get on Reddit and they can fact share and do all of this information sharing that they don't otherwise normally do. And I think if you grasp that abstract concept a little bit and you implement that into your own internal workforce and you think about, is there a knowledge base? Is there community sharing of resources? Is there a place where those documents or those drawings or whatever live? If so, do they know? So that kind of communication and back and forth, which is what engagement is, right?
Exactly. Yeah. The engineering piece is such a great example because that's exactly another profession that has this model and these elements really well established in our society. I was an aerospace engineering major, and we literally, everybody in my major, every time we had a problem set, all worked together. Like it was a team effort. We all had to figure it out together. And the same thing exists in the industry as well. And so people and our leaders, they understand the power of these elements. We just have maybe been a little bit blind to learning or thinking about applying them to the leadership, especially on our front lines. Because to be honest, a lot of times our frontline leadership gets a little overlooked because a lot of the resources for leadership are focused on the C-suite.
Yep, that's exactly right. And we will die on that hill, won't we?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Sharing is caring.
That's right.
We're just saying.
The unique thing is it's very hard to institute a top-down change. And that's really what we're trying to inspire in our industry is how do we create this change where we have a workforce of employees that love what they're doing and that want to do it? Well, in order to do that, you have to create a bottom-up change. And you do that, you focus that on that frontline leader. It's the way to do it.
Absolutely. And then they will in turn pass down what they know. It's definitely the most efficient way probably
yeah. Yeah.
to do that.
Absolutely.
Maybe not efficient, but effective.
Yep.
Definitely. And it's through those types of communities and information sharing and leadership opportunities that you really start to get a good foothold, I think, on training as well. And I think undoubtedly we are going to have to train our frontline workforce at an expedited rate than probably ever before. Going into the next 5 years. But from your perspective and what you've seen out there, can you tell us what your point of view is between hiring someone with experience? I don't know if you've read these job descriptions these days, but it's entry level. You must have 5 years of experience. Yeah. But hiring somebody with that experience versus training them. What use cases have you seen for that? What success stories are out there? What do you think?
Yeah, I'll tell a little bit of a story to explain my viewpoint on this one. I grew up in New York, so I never touched a weapon before I entered the military. Now, as you can imagine, a lot of my peers that I entered the military with grew up in Texas and Georgia and Alabama. So quite different experience, right? What's really interesting is in our basic training, most of the people that were most successful on the weapons ranges were actually people that have never fired a weapon before. I'm just curious your thought. Why do you think that is?
So most people that you were training on weapons, they'd never fired a weapon before, but they were the most successful.
Mm-hmm.
Why do I think that is? Were they excited about it? Were they like, this is cool?
A little bit.
Do you think that has something to do with it?
A little bit. So the main principle at play here is with certain skill sets, it's really easy to develop bad habits. So quite often, it's more difficult to unlearn and then relearn than it is to just learn from scratch.
I would have never connected the two of these things for some reason. And it's funny because I literally just had a conversation with a client of mine earlier today about recruiting fresh grads from college because of the same reason.
Yep.
I would never have thought to put those two things together.
Yeah. Yeah. Now there are some people that have been shooting rifles their whole life and were trained properly, and they were obviously exceptional. But out of the 80% of people that just picked it up on their own, people that had picked it up on their own previously had so many bad habits, it took them a lot longer to actually learn how to shoot a rifle with the proper technique. And that's what ultimately set them back a little bit. And so I parallel that to leadership, especially frontline leadership, because think about it, like our society teaches us how to succeed as an individual, right? If you think about school, if you think really just about our societal values, and then pair with that all of the things you experience in your life that create some subconscious mindsets and beliefs and all of those kinds of things that we take with us into leadership. It often takes so many of us a lot of time to actually unlearn all the things that we were taught as individuals in order to then become a good leader, because it's antithetical at the end of the day, right? What allows you to succeed as an individual, and this is why I failed as a new leader, because I was such a successful individual, but it really doesn't help you when you're collectively leading teams. And so the challenge is, if you go and hire someone that has maybe had 5 years of experience as a leader already, they may have actually further cemented some of those beliefs and actually created some unhealthy beliefs in terms of leadership that you're going to have to help them unlearn. And you see this time and time again. It's typically what happens is people get really excited when they first enter into leadership. 30 to 60 days later, it gets really hard. Their manager's breathing down their neck. They have all these management responsibilities they got to keep up with. And then they start to lean on their authority. And if you start leaning on your authority too long, you start to believe that's actually how you lead, when that's actually how you lead as a last resort. Not that authority is a bad thing. I think it's important. And there should be some boundaries there. But it's never going to be the leadership style that actually truly creates and activates your workforce. So I say all that to say, I don't necessarily think it's good or bad to do one or the other. I think regardless of what you do and who you find, I think the most important thing is that you find a person with a work ethic and with a personality that matches the role you need to fill. And I think the second piece is you don't take for granted however they performed in their last job or in their last role, and you make sure you set them up for success and give them clarity to reach that success in those first 90 days. Because if you help them get a victory in those first 90 days, they're going to be set, right? It's like when you're doing a weight loss program or something. Like if you start weight coming off, you're committed. You know what I mean?
They're going to be set. And yeah, and that and your retention rates are automatically going to. Somebody will feel vested in you if you do that, if you help them succeed. 100% of the time.
Yeah. What happens with so many new leaders is, hey, I want you to go shadow this guy for a day and you'll figure it out. Like, we'll see how it goes. What are you expecting from him?
Yeah. I think that's interesting. Also, what you said about leadership styles, that your leadership style is irrelevant. Interesting. I'm gonna have to check out some of those books you were reading. If you got that idea from, did you get that idea from a book? Where can I find more? Where can I find out more about this?
Let's see. The book I'm reading right now, it's a sales book. It's called The Ultimate Sales Machine by Chip Holmes. It's a pretty famous one. It's focused around building a sales team, but that parallels to building a leadership team as well. But yeah, I think the big thing is you want people with the right heart posture as leaders. And so what I would do is if I had to fill a leadership role, whether I could source it internally or externally, that would be the most important thing I'm looking for. I could teach you how to create results and build systems and processes. And I could teach you all management tasks are easy. It's leading a team and giving them clarity and direction that's hard. And so if you could find someone with the heart to do that, yeah, you're golden.
Awesome. And there's going to be a lot of younger leaders, I think, coming up and emerging over the next 5 years as well. And we really want to set them up. I'm a big advocate for the kids. I'm all about the kids. Like, we need the future generations to succeed. But how do we empower the younger leaders that are coming onto the manufacturing scene as we go here?
Yeah, I think the number one thing that I think everybody craves is one, clarity. And I think we've beat that dead horse quite a bit. But I think two, it's that relationship piece, which we also touched a little bit on as well. And so if people want to pursue leadership, which almost inevitably is going to happen if you want to continue to progress in your careers, I think the best thing we can do for the next generation as they promote is to empower them with these tools and with this structure, this strategic structure that we've talked about. Because I think when we do that, we're actually going to change kind of the aura of leadership in our industry. If you think about it, for the most part, a lot of people have a very negative connotation with leadership. Most of us still end up reaching for it and taking it, but we all know, man, I'm going to get really busy. It's probably going to take over my life.
Most of the front line is absolutely on brand with that. And I think if you look at some of the content on just individuals, people's Instagram accounts, there's all kinds of stuff out there, Twitter, where people are always like slamming growing in a company and what's my job do for me? And my job's not going to care. They're going to replace me if I die or something. I've seen stuff like that, right?
Yeah. So I think the biggest thing we could do at the end of the day, it's an industry-wide marketing campaign, but really you can only control what you can control within your organization. But if you can, one, create a leadership team that doesn't work 15 hours a day and isn't always stressed out, right? You have to lead by example in that regard. And then two is if you can help create clarity as to, like, leadership is actually a good thing. Like being a leader is actually going to give you more joy than you could ever find, maybe in life, than a few short other things. I think we want to create this image of aspirational leadership, because you're right. If you look at social media today, I think the number is upwards of 70-80% of Gen Z don't ever want to be a leader. And that's a little alarming, right? That probably means they view most of their leaders as not good leaders. And that's why we have to change that.
Absolutely. That's a really interesting statistic. Can you share more on that?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, the biggest statistic I'm most familiar with is this kind of idea of accidental managers. And that's not really a kind of younger generation thing. It's more or less most, I think it's upwards of 2/3 frontline supervisors to mid-level managers accidentally end up in leadership. Like, it wasn't anything they were ever intentionally looking to achieve in their life. It was the next step in their career. There was a vacancy. Their boss needed to hire someone. They were really good at their job, and now they're the manager. And so I think with that, you get a lot of people that don't take leadership positions and treat them like professionally, I guess would be the best way to put it, professional leadership. And so as a result, what I think has taken place in our culture is a lot of individuals or people that have individual contributor centric careers have really developed this connotation of management is stressful, management takes over your life, management means you have no work-life balance. Management means that you're stressed out. Management means X, Y, and Z. And I think that has filtered down, that culture, if you will, has filtered down into the millennials and now into Gen Z. And they're like, these generations, that we're the people that have boundaries and we're no BS. So we're like, yeah, I don't like that. Screw you. Like, I'm not doing it. Yeah. And I think that's what we're seeing happening.
Interesting. That's really an interesting take. I had no idea that the statistics were that high for Gen Z, that they were that opposed to leadership opportunities.
Yeah. Yeah. It's eye-opening. It really is.
And it is.
Obviously, most of these statistics are pretty generic, but when you think about it, that should be pretty concerning for the manufacturing industry, because even though if you're US-based, which most of the audience we're talking to is, those numbers are going to be a little bit better for you. But then to caveat that, if you're in the manufacturing industry, that they actually tend to be a little bit worse too. So you got to take a lot of these statistics, these very kind of generic statistics, with a grain of salt. But yeah, it's a lot of interesting things to think about in the really critically analyze. If you're a senior business leader, if you're executive in manufacturing, like, I would argue if you want your organization to be around 10 years from now, the most important thing that you can figure out is how to get on the positive side of employee retention. And the only way you're going to do that is by making your environment the best place to work. Because if not, we're going to keep losing all of our labor force to the Amazons, to the McDonald's, to all these other places that are going to be able to outpay us in the next 10 years easily.
That's great advice. I love that so much. And this has been a great conversation. For those that are listening in today that maybe want to connect with you or learn more about Operation Lead or more about the awesome human Craig, what is a good way for them to connect with you?
Yeah, absolutely. You can visit us at operationlead.com, or you could just email me, Craig, C-R-A-I-G, at Operation Lead, and then check me out on LinkedIn. I'm pretty active on LinkedIn as well, and would love to connect with everybody that's listening.
That he is. Craig, thank you so much for taking the time and doing this show today. I really appreciate that. I appreciate all of your insights today. For everyone else that is listening in on the podcast today, if you will take a minute and just write us a review, we would appreciate that. Otherwise, we will see you next time.